Hello, Caroline.
Hey, James. Good to see you.
Yeah, weekly occurrence.
It is a weekly occurrence now. So this one's going to be interesting. Although I say that with a little bit of tongue in cheek, don't I? Because when James was like, I think we need to talk about the budget and the economy, I was like, oh, boring.
Do we have to?
But it is important.
It is important, and it does affect us all as property investors. And it's one of the things that is massively outside our control that and there are plenty of things like that in property, but we just have to react and adapt to those changes as and when they come. There are certain things that are massively inside your control. The budget is definitely one of the things that is outside your control.
Yeah.
So we are recording this on the 14th of March, which is the day before the budget is announced. However, we've kind of got a good idea about what's coming. So if there is any major shocks, this is everyone, all of our listeners can have a bit of a laugh at us and tell us how we got it very wrong.
Yeah, we're not actually talking about the most obvious thing that was announced by Jeremy.
Yeah.
There we are. Okay, so what do you think? Well, Mystic Meg, what do you think Jeremy's going to say?
She's gone now, isn't she?
Yeah. what's he gonna say that is of interest for us to talk about tonight?
So first of all, there's going to be continued support for energy bills, which affects all of our tenants. That's going to help let them have more money in our pockets. Also, if you're a HMO investor, it means that you're going to be getting an extended period of discount on your bills as well, so that's good for cash flow. They always give with one hand and take with the other, don't they?
Of course. They are always like, oh, here's a lovely, lovely sweetie over here. And then we're just going to cover it in salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a big bonus for us, for all the HMOs and things like that. And that will then extend, I guess, past sort of when things are starting, it's getting a bit warmer and bill usage then drops a bit because people aren't needing to use the electricity as much, not using the gas to heat the house. So that kind of really tides us over HMO-wise, certainly until next winter, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
From being here any big yucky bills. They're also giving to us.
Have you noticed a huge, just on a personal note, have you noticed a massive difference in your...
They've not gone up hugely. We did have one the other day that so this is a 6-bed HMO, and we were on a commercial, because it was a commercial to resi conversion. We were on a commercial tariff. The tariff ended, and our average, so it normally costs us about £250 a month. The bill came in last month of £1,700.
Because we've gone off the
rate tariff. Yeah, that's jumped up a little bit. so that was a bit of a surprise. And because it was on a commercial tariff, we didn't get any relief either. So there was none of the £60 back thing each and every month. So that's been swiftly taken away from that kind of tariff, and we've put it back onto to a resi tariff, which is coming in cheaper at the moment than commercial. But we've noticed, so that they've kind of said we were on average paying about £200-250. They've said you're going to be paying close to £510 a month now. So there is obviously an increase in, if you're coming off your fixed tariffs, and learn from my mistake, keep track of when you're coming off your fixed tariffs. And chat to your energy suppliers. Don't kind of just presume everything's all hunky dory, because those lovely low cost fixed tariffs end at some point in time.
Well, the lesson there, James, is actually you need a virtual assistant to be tracking all your admin, because clearly you took the eye off the ball there, didn't you?
It's not just one of the things you don't ever consider. No. You're like, mortgage, making sure that gets paid, making sure the direct debit's set up to get the bill paid. But when the actual tariff ends, I'm like, I didn't know.
No, we're so good at making deals and making it happen, and then after that, you just lose interest, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So energy, there is going to be a additional income, or the government are going to be putting money in to help people reduce the cost of childcare, to encourage people to go back to work after having kids, because there's been a lot of talk about this recently as well. And the cost of childcare almost outweighs the average salary. So a lot of people are kind of going, why should I be going back to work in order to pay someone else to look after my kid and have no money left at the end of the day, and all my time's gone to my boss and that kind of thing. So that's really a good thing, I think.
Argument. Yeah, it's a really valid argument. So that's a positive. It's encouraging people to go and work.
And that's going to help the labor force as well, because one of the big things that we've seen since COVID and Brexit is there's been a massive reduction in the amount of people available to work. So that's kind of why we're seeing pubs shutting so early. We're seeing, you know, businesses struggling to find the staff. We had a lady on one of our events who owns and runs a coffee shop and wanted to set up a string of coffee shops and was like, I've got one, but I can do that because I'm hands on. I can't get the staff anywhere else.
The staffing is massive, but that really is, rather than COVID, Brexit, right?
Brexit, yeah. But also, you know, why would somebody go and being a barista is probably not the highest paid role. So if you've got a young kid, you're probably thinking, well, what's the point in me going to make coffee for someone else? Well, I pay someone all that salary just to look after my baby. So it's, you know, that could massively help the economy move on, the reduced labor. So that'd be an interesting thing to see, and the what actually happens there and how much cheaper is it worth it? Because obviously if you're a high rate taxpayer, it's probably worth paying for childcare. Because there's a lot more income coming in. But if you're only a basic rate taxpayer, it might not really be worth your while doing it. So reduced costs, potentially a good thing. There will be, so that is said, they are going to be taking away. So there is, they've flip-flopped around with corporation tax quite a lot in the Liz Truss era. You know, did it even exist?
What era was that? Like, I literally blinked and it was over, right?
Yeah. So we had like the mini budget. So they were going to up it from 19 to 25. Oh no, Rishi back when he was chancellor said they were going to up it from 19 to 25. Then Kwasi Kwarteng was like, nope, we're putting it back down to 19. And it's now highly believed that it's going to be going up to 25% again. So not ideal. It just means you're going to need to be, you know, reinvesting a lot of your company income and things like that. So you don't want to be sat there on excess profits in your limited company. Just get them working again. So with all these things, everything's... it's workable. You know, you can be drawing that down in dividends. You can be moving it around. You can be, you know, reinvesting, moving it into another company, getting it working. But it's basically a good time to not be sitting on your laurels doing nothing, thinking, oh, my company's really profitable now.
Yeah. But I mean, it's probably worth saying that how many budgets have we lived through where they said, we're going to do X and it's going to come in like 3 years time. And by that time, we're about six other chancellors down the road.
Exactly.
So it's like, okay, you can say that you're going to do that, but until it's actually
in place,
this moment in place, I'm not going to worry about that too much, or I'm going to leave it to my accountant to worry about.
Yeah, because it'll probably, you know, they won't be able to do anything for the tax year that's ending very soon. It'll probably be the tax year after that. And who knows where we'll be by then. You know, we're probably wading towards a new government by then anyway.
Exactly. And then that is going to stir up all manner of other changes. You know, it's funny how human beings hate change, but that's all we're constantly dealing with.
And we opt for change a lot of the time as well, because we kind of go, this isn't working, we don't like it, we want something new and different.
This is where I look at countries like Singapore and I just think, wow, politically, I know we're not talking politics right now, but it is intrinsically linked, of course, to the economy and the budget. But Singapore have had the same government in place for decades and decades, and they could set out a plan that they are going to create an infrastructure that brings businesses to their little, small, tiny, independent country that didn't even have its own water supply in like 40 years down the line. And that will happen because no one's going to come in and say, that's a crappy idea, we don't want to do that.
And it's a democracy. So the same government have been in charge and been voted in continuously for all that time.
Because everyone trusts that they've got control. I always love going to Singapore, but they have a huge big building that has a development plan that shows you how Singapore is actually going to look in 10 years time. And it's actually happening. And guess what? When they say they're going to build a road or build a building, it happens really quickly and efficiently. Unlike here in the UK, that when there's a pothole, that takes like 5 years for anyone to even take notice of that.
Did you see the guy who was drawing penises around the potholes in order to get them fixed by the council? He was like, this seems to be the best way to get them fixed.
Oh, I mean, seriously.
Or the Rod Stewart school of thought, just do it yourself.
Well, there's something going around putting little plants in potholes to encourage people to drive around the potholes. I mean, this country is a mess. There's no.
We're creative. We're creative in our solutions.
We do have to just laugh at ourselves. Otherwise, I mean, what's the alternative? So, okay, but back on track. Forget Singapore. We're not living there.
No.
They've got it right. Because they've actually got really low, low corporation tax to encourage businesses to their country to then increase the population that are employed and stimulate growth and this, that, and the other. But this country have got it so wrong. The more they put up corporation tax, people are just going to go, sod this, I'm off to Singapore.
Yeah.
Well, I'll pay 10%.
I'll do something different or I'll, yeah.
It's so short-sighted. Oh, anyway, keep calm, carry on, let's go.
So the big news is obviously regarding pensions and ages and allowances. So the pension age is going to be increasing, which is kind of no real surprise with all the helicopter money that came in during the pandemic. And, you know, we're not going to be able to afford for people to be on pensions for as long as they were. And, you know, that needing a way to kind of earn back extra, you know, if you're a 65, 68 year olds who's worked right to the top of your career, there's going to be potentially 3 more years of good prime earnings there for the government to be able to tax before you retire. Mm-hmm. And it means there's 3 years of less of state pension they've had to pay you on top of that as well. So it's kind of like a double win for them in raising the pension age.
So you reckon the pension age will go to
68 they're talking about.
68. I mean, wow. Mm. I mean,
It's not a pretty thing to think about, having to work until you're 68.
It's interesting because obviously the old school mentality is, you know, work in your career, pay your mortgage off, get a little nest egg, and then when you retire, you can go traveling and enjoy your holidays and all that kind of stuff. And I know we're an aging population and medicine's doing great things to keep us alive for longer, but you don't want to live longer than work for longer, right?
Maybe we need to set up like a cruise liner, Caroline, because that's going to be the easiest way for people to get around and travel in their old age. Maybe we need to do what Richard Branson's done and set up a cruise line company and provide cruises for the retirees.
Well, they're going to have lots of money, allegedly.
Yeah.
Although I don't believe that for a second. I mean, let's face it. We see people living their lives in Homebase, B&Q, Tesco's, who are clearly already retired, but the pension is just not enough to physically live on. And I think that's, while they're talking about, you know, bolstering the pension pot for themselves, buying themselves more time, it's not actually doing.
You also raised a good point earlier about how people are living longer and medicine's doing well. And, you know, as you say, is there potentially the plan there, because they need to get people working longer, paying in, because there's not enough money to pay out the pensions that they need to?
That's exactly what it is. The pension pot, it has run dry. People that are in, let's say, their 20s and 30s of this generation now are not paying into a personal pension pot, let's be honest. They're not, that's not a priority to them. That generation, it's just like, oh, I'll worry about that when I'm old and crusty. Yeah. Whereas, you know, when I was in my early 20s getting a job, you know, my dad was like, come on, pension. You got to start paying into it as early as possible to make it, you know, worthwhile. And I basically did it just because he told me to. But I don't think parents now are necessarily telling their kids to do that, because
they're probably not seeing they're not seeing the pension themselves. They've like not had the benefit of using it, and they're kind of like, well, why should you?
Yeah, and it does sort of fly in the face of, where's the bloody money going? You know, you're paying potentially in some cases hundreds of pounds a month, and
thousands.
You have no idea where that's going. You're just trusting some fund manager somewhere, God knows, in some fund that's maybe going to be medium performing or high risk or low risk or whatever it is.
And you're paying hefty fees on that.
Yeah. And then you've just got to hope that when you retire, it's going to be enough.
Yeah.
And that when you break it down and spell it out like that, you're like, who would ever in their right mind invest in that scheme?
The credit crunch kind of 2008, when a lot of pension money did go missing, is probably scared a lot of people into thinking, well, I may as well use it now because I might not actually have access with this money in the future, or it might be worth a lot less than I've actually paid in. So yeah, I'm going to just spend it now and we'll worry about, you know, the future down the line.
And also the whole cost of living crisis, people are thinking, actually, I can't afford to pay into a pension anymore. I need to actually afford to pay my
rainy days today.
Yeah, pay my food and keep my house warm now. And when I'm old and crusty, God knows if I'm even going to still be here. Yeah. Right. So they're just going to think, put it off, kick the ball down the road and hope that there's going to be another plan, another salvation later on. Mm. It's scary. It really is scary. I mean, I can't see where this is going to get better. There really does need to be a better system in place, but there's not one coming anytime soon.
And then we have the actual amount that you can pay into a pension is going to be increasing. So whilst they're saying work longer, you are going to be able to, at the moment, it's just over £1 million you can have in a pension tax-free. That's going to be nearly doubling to 1.8 million they're talking about. Okay. So, and the amount that you can put in each year is going to increase from £40,000 up to £50,000.
So let's talk about why they're doing that then.
Yeah. So, well, as an investor, you should know that you wouldn't, you know, you're not just going to trust that to a fund manager. Take control of that pension yourself.
Yep.
Do something that you know with that pension. Now, that might be giving it to a kind of an IFA that you know that you trust and an independent financial advisor instead of just like a pension company. Or you can convert that into a SIP, which is a self-invested personal pension, that you can choose what you do with that. And even if on a basic level, you kind of get that in a fund that's tracking the like the S&P, I'm not giving financial advice, but the S&P 500 is, you know, tracked very well, been inflation beating for large periods of history. So at that point, you kind of know, well, if I'm putting it there, no one really needs to manage that. And it will just do the right thing and increase over time. If you put it into gold has increased and precious metals have always increased in value as well. You can do that with your pension instead of it just sort of being in a fund manager's account who doesn't really has no relationship with that money. It means nothing to him. And he's just like, yeah, buy this or sell that. Oh, I lost a bit of money there. Doesn't matter. It's not mine. So self-invested personal pensions are good, but what we really like are SASSs.
Yeah, SASSs.
SASSs, S-S-A-S, so small self-administered schemes.
I always get the S's around the wrong way, but it all comes right in the wash, right?
Because with a SASS, you can loan money to yourself.
Yep, love that.
Nice, which you can then use as a property investor. You can use that. It has to be a commercial transaction. So you have to pay yourself an interest rate, but you're paying your own pension more money.
Mm.
So it's like paying yourself angel investment money, which is fine. We're good with that. Yep. And it can be, I think it's 5%.
5%.
Yeah.
5%. Yeah.
And you can do a loan. And you can also use your pension to buy commercial property. So you can use it if it's got first charge, you can use that against a commercial property.
You can actually do it on Resi now too.
You can do it on Resi now.
Resi now too. That came into play. It kind of sneaked in the back door, that did. I was always advised, no, it's all only commercial and commercial. But actually, the key to the Resi thing is you can't have any lending on it. So your pension needs to buy it. Entirely, yeah, the first charge thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can do Resi now too.
So kind of 99% mentality, people working jobs, people that kind of don't get this, leave it all to someone else. They'll probably never even hit that £1 million mark, let alone the new 1.8. But if you know what you're doing, if you've got surplus of money coming in from property, you can be putting £50,000 of that a year in a pension, using that to, you know, in some areas, cash buy a Resi property within your pension tax-free. So you're kind of like, you can win on so many levels if you get this right. And if you've got the right advisors around you, if you've got the right knowledge, if you've got the right team supporting you.
Yeah. I mean, my tax advisor is always like, right, we're going to put this amount of money into your pension. I'm always thinking, no.
We're going to use it to do X, Y, and Z. And again, this is another area where you're kind of like, oh, corporation tax is going up. Well, corporation tax might effectively go down because you're going to be putting more money into your pension.
I know that's what my tax advisor is going to be saying to me. I mean, sometimes I'm always like, is that a sledgehammer to crack or not? But, you know, depending on what actually comes out in the wash and what's going to be imminently or immediately in place, well, I'll take Jane's advice and see what she says. But she, yeah, I always hated the advice of put tens of thousands of pounds into a pension, and then you get 17% relief here, and then you get this, and then you get that. But I'm still thinking, is it a bloody pension? And I hate pensions.
But if it's, again, if it's doing something that you are in control of, it's just like diversifying your financial investments.
That's it. And I, you know, it is a huge mindset shift that I've had to work on really hard. Mm. Because I feel like the pension is something that's locked away that I can't really get to. But in actual fact, with the SaaS, there's so much flexibility.
You can still do with it today. You can put it in there and then loan it straight back to yourself. So you're kind of just building your angel investment pot, your self angel investment pot.
Exactly.
But getting tax relief on it. So
yeah,
I quite strangely like things like that. I know it's a bit geeky and nerdy, but it's very clever what you can actually do and how you can be helping yourself build this portfolio. So whilst the government don't necessarily, you know, arms out signpost you to this is how you can make more money from all these changes, they do kind of leave, you know, crumbs to lead you to what could be a good way to use all these tools that they give you in order to put more money in your pocket. But not everyone gets that. And I think, you know, the education side of things and having understanding about all this stuff is really, really important, because it could be so easy for it to fly over your head and not realize and you're not then taking advantage of the tools that are available for you as an investor.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've based tonight or this discussion mainly on little headliners that are being teased or drip fed to us through the media of what they suspect is going to come. But there's always lots of little things that happen in there as well. And the big one, I guess, for the capital gains tax, which was in the last budget.
That was
which
the last budget, but that'll be coming into play as of early April,
will be the capital gains tax
allowance. Yeah, so that was really nice. Everyone got like a 10,300, I think it was, 10,200.
It was 12,300.
Oh, it was 12,300.
Yeah, 12,300.
12,300 of capital gains tax allowance each year, and that was per person. So if you were in a couple, you know, mum and I did a flip a couple of years ago, and we got 100% of our profits there tax-free because it was all under personal name, and it was just under £24,000 profit. So it's kind of like, fantastic. This is like free money. But that's going to be dropping right down to like 5,000, I think, now. So even it might not even be worth doing flips in your own name, because if you're only making 10 grand profit on a flip, you're kind of like, oh, why are you doing this? And capital gains tax is going to be up at 28 if you're a high rate taxpayer, 18 if you're a low rate. So it might be better doing it through a company. Again, this is where your tax advisors will be able to give you advice, but, you know, so taking with one hand, giving away with the other.
That it's an interesting one, isn't it? So they gave you a 12,300 capital gains tax allowance in your personal name. So they've dropped that, and then knowing full well everyone will go, well, sod you, I'm just going to do it in a company structure at 19%. They're like, well, we're going to put that up to 25.
That 25, yeah.
But look, they can't put corporation tax up immediately at 25. No. There's got to be a leeway of time in. And like you say, Labour will probably be in power by then, and let's see what they'll do. You know,
it will probably all change. But that's, and there's talk about creating new like business hubs in the UK as well, which is again a good thing, because it's about kind of kickstarting the economy, getting it going again, getting more people into the workforce, into labour. So I think they really are trying to kind of put more bums back on employed seats to get the country kind of back to where it was. So, you know, they're trying their best.
I mean, I don't know about you, James, but I've just heard so much over the last year, even 2 years, about how landlords feel like the government is absolutely out to get them.
Yeah.
Very much. Oh, you know, clause 24, section 24
that
tax.
That was a big one. That one.
That was massive. I have to say, I'm personally very surprised it's still around.
I really thought it would, because in Ireland they were talking about getting rid of it. In Ireland, I don't know whether they actually did or not.
But I am really surprised it's still here. Sherry Blair was going to like take them to court and do all sorts with it. With that in mind, everyone's just gone, well, sod it, I'll just do everything in a limited company then.
It's hurt those that already had properties as opposed to those that are going out and actively buying today.
I've fallen for sure as a victim to that, for having HMOs with big big chunky mortgages on them and big chunky profits on them. I felt the pain on that, and it has made me think, God, everyone's selling up. Is, you know, it served its purpose. I've made my money, but I just can't get my head around the fact that it's still a cash flowing asset and that the tax can change.
Exactly. It could change.
The asset there is going up in value, and the tax can change. Things change. And all it's going to take is, you know, a chancellor with shitloads of property in their own name to come in and go, I don't like this thing here.
Let's... Or they're kind of, realizing that maybe it's not bringing in as much money as the government thought it was going to. And if somebody that actually sits down, looks at the balance sheet and go, well, we could be bringing in as much money, penalizing people but taxing people in a different way to get the same result by removing this.
Yeah. I mean, the fundamental is tax is a false economy. The higher the tax, the less people, you know, are going to be hanging around to do it, because the world is the world is so accessible to so many people now. Back in the day, if you're in the UK, you're in the UK, and that was it. And you maybe got on a boat to go to Australia once in a blue moon and never come back. But that was really unusual. Whereas now people are like, sod it, I'm going to go to the UAE and work tax-free for 10 years. And then just
and again, another reason why we're struggling for labor over here, because loads of other countries are making it more attractive to workers.
We've got to get this country to a place where they're lowering the tax, but then, of course, you've got all this debt that you have to pay. So they've got the conundrum right here.
Yeah, it's not. I don't envy them, because I don't feel there's an easy solution to the problem that they're facing. And as we always say on when we're running trainings or anything, it's like it doesn't matter what color the party is. They're all facing the same challenge that they can't really actually do anything with. And, you know, they don't know what they're doing, because, you know, I wouldn't know what I was doing if I was in their shoes either, because it is almost like it's an impossible logic problem.
It's really funny when you see headlines about slagging off politicians that are multimillionaires or multibillionaires. It's like, you know, what do they possibly know about the person on the ground? And you're like, they're a multi-billionaire because they probably did something really flippin' sensible and really good in business.
Well, they've worked hard. They've created a side hustle. You know, how many politicians kind of do after dinner speeches and things like that, and they kind of work because using the position that they've engineered for themselves. They've probably, you know, walked however many knocked on however many doors in their in the younger years to kind of get themselves into that position. And they're like, I'm just going to milk it while I can. I'm going to earn as much money whilst I can, because I know that being a politician isn't a forever career. I'll be voted out at some point in time, and I need to do something now while I can.
I'd love, you know, an Alan Sugar or someone like that to just come in and go, right, I'm going to run this country like it was my business.
Well, he was on the Tory board back in 2010, I think.
Was he?
Yeah, he was. Alan Sugar was part of the cabinet.
Okay, that's news to me. I must have slept through that. I don't know.
I'm sure he was. Because again, this week they were digging up tweets of him saying the whole Gary Lineker thing. They were tweets of him saying, you know, vote Tory, Labour don't know what they're doing. Labour, because he was on the, you know, he was on the cabinet for the Tory, for the coalition government.
Oh my God. Do you know what?
Even he didn't fix it. So there we go. It just goes to show that.
Yeah, but he probably wasn't in a position of being able to actually do anything.
Yeah, he was like business secretary or something like that.
I mean, look, Jeremy Hunt was health secretary and pissed off all the doctors, wasn't he, at one point?
Yeah, and they're all striking, you know, tomorrow now.
So he annoyed all the doctors in that job. So he's coming into Chancellor here and he's going to annoy all
everyone.
So yeah, brilliant. Give us someone that actually knows business and economy. And anyway, there we are. So that's been a thoroughly dull topic, James. We had to talk about it, didn't we?
Yeah. And obviously, if there are any big surprises there, please remember that this was filmed the day before the budget.
We'll do anything with VAT. Let's get rid of VAT.
Actually, they might do.
Like, what is the point of VAT?
A lot of businesses are saying VAT is a real hindrance, because 20% of literally anything that you spend in our shop just goes straight in the government's pocket.
Yeah. So, a lot of the time you can claim it back, and it's just like, it's just
equally, there are a lot of businesses that that can't claim it. Well, they can't claim it back because there isn't VAT to pay. Like a lot of food, like cafes and things like that, there's no VAT on raw produce, but there is on cooked produce. They're kind of going, restaurants are like, we don't pay any VAT when we purchase things, then we have to pay VAT, we have to charge VAT and give VAT to the government when we sell our wares.
It's just bonkers. Bonkers. The whole thing is anyway, it's an interesting time, and we don't like change, but we want change. It's like, we don't like this, let's just change it, but then when they change,
we'll change it, but we don't really think we're gonna like what it's gonna change into.
Yes, exactly. We don't like how you've changed that, just change that better. So it's interesting times for sure. And look, is it going to stop us doing what we're doing, James?
No. Again, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's just going to be, it's going to tweak the way in which we do things.
Yeah.
And there will be some minor changes to the structure of our businesses, but there's no wholesale changes at all. There will be no budget that ever comes in that says you must stop property investing, because there'll be lots of homeless people if that happens.
Yeah. I mean, I have a phrase that I use a lot, which is, you have to take your medicine. You know, it might be a bit bitter sometimes, it might taste horrible, but take that medicine and actually it will be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end.
Yeah.
My favorite little saying.
Just keep going.
Just keep going. And there will be some painful things along the way, like section 24 of my HMOs in my personal name. But again, I've got a plan. I've got a pot, you know, I've got a little advice that I can follow with that. And look, if there isn't a solution, then you can always negate it by just making more money in somewhere else.
I was going to say, yeah, just buying more HMOs in your own name.
Exactly. So, yeah, lots of things to come. But thanks very much again for your time.
Lovely to chat to you as well. We've got interviews coming up in the upcoming weeks as well. So we've been busy interviewing our students and things like that. So lots less of myself and Caroline, more of our more special guests going to be coming your way as well.
Yeah, really experienced guys coming up that have lots of lessons that they've learned. And I think that's a great way for our listeners to learn, is to hear how other people have done it and really made a success of it. And yes, go through and let's hear about their medicine and how better that tasted.
Everyone's had it.
Everyone's taken the medicine.
Yeah. We still need to do the episode where we just whinge and complain about all the naff stuff.
Well, I'd love to hear from our listeners. Either message us on our community Facebook page, so Property Well System Community Facebook group. And we're toying with the idea of doing one episode where we talk about all the things we hate about being a property investor. If you want to hear that raw, bitter, twisted,
angry, long episode,
it might be a three-dayer. Then just put some comments or messages on that Facebook community. We'll hold it at bay. We'll try and keep it as positive as possible. But we want this content to be
real.
We want it to be raw and real for people to know exactly what is going on. But interestingly, when we talk about all the crappy bits, the amount of comments and contact we get from people going, I've had that. It was really shit. And you made me feel better.
Someone else, I'm not the only person feeling that way or having that happen too.
Yeah. So if you feel like you need a bit of reassurance and you want to hear how crap it is, just let us know. But other than that, we wouldn't change it for the world, James.
No. Would we? No. Just keep calm and carry on is the message, as always.
Yeah, of course. Brilliant. See you next time, James.
See you next time. Lovely chat, Caroline. Bye for now.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of This Property Life with myself and Caroline, discussing all the trials and tribulations of the things that we've been recently doing. Please tune in again next week for another episode from the Property World System and This Property Life team.